In the online world, most business owners would give design and layout more importance than to website copy. How many times have you heard, "I'll write copy myself," or "get my assistant to write a few words for me"? Well, website copy isn't about filling space on the website. Instead, these words represent a message that converts your visitors into customers. Today, we have Josh Garofalo on the show, sharing about the process of writing revenue-generating website copy. So let's welcome him and get started. Welcome to Smart Web Creators. In this podcast, you will listen to creators creating amazing things on the web, and sometimes just me talking useful web stuff. I'm your host, Davinder Sinkanth. Let's get started. Hi, Josh. How are you?
Hey, thanks for having me. Doing well. I'm starting my day off with this show, so I'm feeling like today's going to be a pretty good day.
Awesome.
Like starting the day off with a podcast whenever possible. It gets me pumped up and feel good for the rest of the day.
Fresh start, fresh day, fresh words.
Exactly.
Okay, so before we begin, why don't you give a quick introduction about your online life, like what you've been doing in the last 5-10 years in the copywriting world, or you migrated from some other ecosystem to copywriting world?
Yeah, for sure. So I won't go too far back to make sure we can keep this nice and short. But basically, I did my undergrad in human psychology and physiology. Really loved the classes that I had where we got to sort of dip into the way people make decisions. And I sort of saw that as something that I could apply commercially, whereas a lot of psychology was very abstract. So I really gravitated towards those courses. And then on the physiology side, I was actually doing a lot of the hard sciences. And so I thought I was going to go to med school. And then I heard about this master's program that was nearby that would tap into the local startup ecosystem that we have here. So last second, probably to my parents' great disappointment, I decided that I wasn't going to do med school. I went and did this master's, which was basically like an MBA, but focused on online, like digital business and technology.
Mm-hmm.
Graduated from there, started at a startup in town. I was like employee number 2, I believe. I did all things marketing, product, sales. I mean, technically, I was the marketer, but really, I had to do a little bit of everything because we were a startup. And one thing that I really liked there was the copywriting side of things. And the unfortunate thing is when you're in a startup, you only need so much copy. So that was actually a really small part of my job. And as I was getting into that, and as I was working on the website and the emails and positioning and things like that, I realized that copywriting is actually a discipline in its own right. And so from there, I got into copywriting. I connected with Joanna Wiebe from Copy Hackers. I'm not sure if you know who she is.
Yep.
And she had encouraged me to start my business. And so on the side, because I was still happily employed, I started a little SaaS copywriting blog. I wrote a couple of posts that weren't amazing, if I'm honest, but because they were so focused on the SaaS space, people enjoyed them and they reached out to me. And from there, I got 2 while paying clients on the side. I quit my job, and that was 2015. And so since then, I've had the good fortune of working with some amazing companies like HubSpot, Hotjar, Cisco, AWeber, a whole bunch of awesome companies, and sort of getting inside and working on the copy. We can talk about this a little bit later in the episode, but I mean, it's not just the words, it's getting into the guts of the company. And yep. As the years have progressed, that's become sort of my differentiator, is how I've gone deep into so many different SaaS companies in different stages. And the words are the output, the thing you see at the end, but really a lot of the value that I add now is not seen on the page. And we can definitely talk about that a little bit later.
Okay. So, you know, while preparing for this episode, I was actually checking out your website, Sway Copy, and, you know, mm-hmm. like check the copy of a copywriter, like, you know, one line on your website that really, you know, got stuck in my head, which is, I'm going to quote it here, like, "I don't wait for inspiration to strike. I sit down at my desk and work. This is my mm-hmm. copywriting process from hellos to revenue generating copy." Now, right. This is the perfect example of being clear, not being clever, and right at top of it. Like, this is what my process is. You like mm-hmm. it? Fine. If you don't like it or it doesn't resonate, it's fine. Now, absolutely clear. Now, but if you know, come to the real world where small businesses are looking for or not looking for copy unless someone tells them you need copywriting. So
right.
in that in that, you know, ecosystem, it's more of, you know, oh, I'll write it myself. Like in the introduction, I'll get someone like my assistant, my secretary to write a few words and we are done with it. There, the process becomes describing about the project or the product they're offering, not about educating them in terms of conversion. Have you noticed this in general? I guess it's a rampant issue in copywriting world.
It's one of the main things that I do is I help founders and marketing leaders get out of their own way in that capacity. And you're right. It's true, especially among like small businesses where they're doing everything themselves, but it's also true amongst SaaS companies that you would think have it all together. And it's just natural when it's your product and you love it to talk about all the features, because when you do that and you read it back to yourself, the benefits, the value, how it's different than the competitors, it's all self-evident to you because you're so familiar with the space, right? But for your customer or your prospect, that's not the case. And so what you want to do is obviously some features need to be mentioned somewhere on the page in order to check some boxes. But the difference that a copywriter will bring is they will, for one, position you well so that they so that the customer automatically sees you in a favorable light, and they should be able to do that quite quickly. And from there, it's focusing on benefits and outcomes and values and showing that you can empathize with their pain points, because obviously, if you understand their pain points inside and out and you describe it back to them in a way they can relate, then they're more likely to believe that when you say you have a solution, you actually do. Another thing that a lot of people that aren't copywriters shy away from is social proof. And I wouldn't say they shy away from it in that they're afraid of it or they think it's not effective. They just don't think about it. When really, if you have opportunities, and most companies with a product and happy customers have this opportunity to say something, so whether that's a benefit or a value proposition, and then back it up with some sort of social proof that's contextually relevant, that's a huge opportunity as well. So yeah, like you said, a lot of companies, they are not thinking about it this way. They just think, this is my website. I'm just going to lay out all the features more or less and maybe hint at some benefits, and my ideal customer is going to totally get it. That's just not the way it works.
So if we have, say, a business owner or a SaaS product owner listening to this episode, just to give that person that light bulb moment, how would you define the difference between a website copy that just describes a product vis-a-vis a website copy that educate, convert, and brings revenue in the end?
Yeah, so I think I kind of hinted at that, but a website that describes a product is going to be heavily focused on those features. And a website that actually educates and converts is going to start, for one, where the customer actually is right now in their journey. So that's knowing their stage of awareness, whether they're problem aware, solution aware, or if they're already aware of your product and some of your direct competitors. You're going to meet them where they actually are at that point when they're landing on your webpage. And then from there, you're going to take them on a journey that should feel kind of like a slippery slope, in that when they're thinking about the next thing or they have an objection, you're addressing it on the page. When they're wondering what this is going to do for them, what the outcome is going to be, that's going to hit them right at the right point on the page. And that comes through a lot of customer research. It comes from viewing things, like if you use something like Hotjar, for example, seeing where people are dropping off, that might be a hint that you're missing the mark and that something else needs to go there. Often it's, you know, flipping the content, taking the stuff that you buried at the bottom, bringing it up to the top. It all depends. But really the difference is someone who is just describing their product, it's going to be a very internal driven process. They're going to think about the features that they want to put on the page, and that's the end of that. Whereas someone like me is going to actually talk to the customer, survey the customer, and lay out an argument in a clear and concise way that makes sense in a logical order. That takes them, as I said, through like a slippery slope from, okay, I'll learn a little bit more about this because the hero section kind of resonated with me. It's where I'm at right now in my journey. And then taking them on a natural journey towards actually clicking the button, whether that's, you know, a free trial, buying a product, scheduling a demo, whatever it may be.
Okay, let's focus on writing, you know, copy for a new business. So a business that doesn't have online presence yet. So once you're done with the initial, you know, introduction call, how do you get about deciding on the proposal in terms of the real terms like length of copy or number of pages, tone of messaging, or any other items that you focus on while writing copy for a new business?
So this would be a business that has no online presence whatsoever, or they do, but we're writing, okay, no online presence. No so online. I actually shy away from that. And I can talk a little bit about why, because I'm sure a lot of users will find this useful. Mm-hmm. So there's no shortage of copywriters out there that will say copywriting is the best investment no matter where you are in your business, because obviously it's a self-serving pitch, right? But it's actually not the case. So early on, and I'm not going to speak for all markets, but for my market, which is software as a service, early on, you're much better off doing things that don't scale. So don't worry so much about having the perfect website or a totally built out website at the very beginning. Instead, work on doing those things that don't scale, such as actually talking to some of your warmer leads, your warm contacts, getting your first 10, 20 customers the old fashioned way, just reaching out, demoing the product, working with them, building your product alongside your customer, and actually getting them to pay. Once you actually have a product that people are paying for and enjoying, like they actually like the product, then you want to start thinking about things like your website. And it's at that point where my process would be talking to those customers who are happily paying a decent rate. So your ideal customer. And it's interviewing them, finding out, you know, what was the problem that they were experiencing before you reached out to them? What was it about your product or your pitch that resonated with them that caused them to, want to learn more about it and even give it a try? You know, why did they stick it out through some of those bugs? Because these early customers, if they're using an early product with no web presence, there must be something about your product that's quite intriguing, right? So what is that exactly? So, and then once they started to use your product and implemented in their business in such a way that they're solving problems, what were those problems that they were solving? What were the outcomes? And then what are some of like the big achievements? And we want to get specific here. So if we can find out, you know, that, you know, say it's an email marketing tool or something like that, and we can find out that they spent X less time sending emails because of the way your product works, or they're closing more deals because of this, what were some of those outcomes? And then what I do is I take all of this information that you get directly from the customer, from your ideal customer, at least at this point in your business, and that may change later, but at this point in the business, these are your ideal customers. I take that and then we reflect that back on the page. And so we're basically using the customer to sell more customers, if that makes sense.
And you're referring that you talk to the, you know, paying customers or the happy customers of the, you know, specific product or a company in question. Like, do you actually do it in person, or do you give a form to be filled that will be given by the company itself to their customers? How does that work on a real level?
Yeah. So early on, if they say, like I said, say they have their first 10, 20, even 50 customers, at that point, I'm hopping on calls with customers. It usually takes 30 to 45 minutes. And I take them through this sort of like before, now and in the future where they're headed process. And I understand their relationship to the product. If a customer is more established and they have hundreds or thousands of customers, then I will do some of these calls with the people who they've identified as their ideal customer, or we've identified together as their ideal customer. But I'll also send out a survey that follows a very similar trajectory, but I obviously can't go as deep because I can't ask all those follow-up questions that I wouldn't call. And the reason that I do that is, no matter how great your product is and how friendly you are with your customers, if you send out a survey, only a certain percentage of them are actually going to respond. And so if you only have 10 or 20 customers and I send out a survey, I might get 3 responses and I just can't do anything with that. So if I'm going to get fewer responses, I need them to be over a call so that I can go a lot deeper with those few.
Okay, just circling back a little from this conversation, like you mentioned that you don't work much with the newer businesses who don't have online presence. Are there specific reasons, like they're tight on budget and they don't have that affordability, or they have too many things to focus and the focus should be more on product rather than website copy?
Yeah, it's a combination. So one, it is usually they have a tighter budget at that point, and so it just doesn't make a lot of sense. And the other problem is that, like I said, like I don't think copywriting is the most important thing for them. The ROI just isn't quite there yet. They don't have a ton of traffic. Nobody really knows who they are. And so that even if I put together a perfect website and they have 60 people visiting it each month, like it's not going to do anything for them. And I'm still going to charge the rates that I'm going to charge. And it's going to take them forever to recuperate and actually make something on that investment. So early on, it's typically, you know, do things that don't scale, get some customers. If they've got funding, that's a little bit different, because then they can sort of get a whole bunch of wheels spinning, get the traffic coming in and all that. But if they're like, you know, self-funded bootstrapped company with hardly any customers, I typically just recommend put together a simple website. don't go too deep. Don't make mistakes or anything like that by going too deep and making assumptions that you just can't prove out yet. But just focus on those things that don't scale. And then once you have some of those ideal customers, so people who are really loving the product, paying well for it, then you contact somebody like me, because we can start to amplify that success, right? So that's why I shy away from it. It's just the ROI just typically isn't there for the early stage business.
Okay, so after circling back, let's fast forward. Now you've done the groundwork research by, you know, interacting with the existing customers of a working business. So the next would be, do you take into consideration the existing competitors and their website copy for, you know, inspiration and your research process, like when you're improving the copy of an existing business?
Definitely, but not in the way that most people, especially in my market, do it. Yeah. So the way I'll again talk about SaaS companies because it's what I know best, but I'm sure this this carries over to a lot of other markets as well. But in SaaS, people do consider their competitors, but they do it in a few ways that I think are a little bit misleading. For one, they consider the wrong companies their competitors, in that inside the customer's mind, they're not actually comparing you to these other people. A recent example of that is I did a project for a small company called Tom's Planner, which is a software as a service company. Mm-hmm. And so what they do is they make, you know, creating Gantt charts online super easy. And what you might be tempted to do is to position Tom's Planner against some of the very similar products, because, you know, they're the most similar. That's got to be the ideal competitor to compare yourself against, but it's actually not. Instead, we compared them to the thing they outgrew, which was spreadsheets, which is free but generic, and it gets very tedious once your projects get to a certain size. And the much more complex and upmarket solution, which would be like an MS project. And so we positioned Tom's Planner in the middle of those two. And the reason that I was able to do that confidently is, I mean, among other things, but a very simple question that I asked during interviews in a survey is, I'll mention a couple of different questions. So one would be, who are you comparing us against when you're making this decision? And most often, the names that come up will not be the names that the founders or the marketers are thinking about. They are not the direct competitors. They are this thing that they outgrew and the upmarket solutions. That's often the case. The other question would be, what is it that caused you to look for a solution? And that's where we would get responses like, well, I was managing projects in a spreadsheet and just became like chaotic, you know, to manage projects and manage changes once we got to a certain amount of people and a certain project size. And so I am thinking about the competitors, but I'm not trying to compete directly in most cases with the most similar alternatives out there, because that's often not what's in the customer's mind. The other thing is I'm looking at the copy of the websites of competitors, but I'm not looking to mimic them, which is what a lot of SaaS companies do and a lot of people do. They'll be like, oh, they're doing really well, I'm just going to copy them.
Yeah.
And that doesn't work because, for example, if I'm starting an email marketing tool, the thing that I'm immediately going to go to is MailChimp. And I cannot copy MailChimp because MailChimp has tons of brand recognition. They're getting referrals left, right, and center. They rank like what, number one, two, three, probably for everything they want to rank for. You're new, you're nobody, nobody cares about you yet. You cannot just be like, I'm like MailChimp except smaller and cheaper. That's a terrible place to be, right? But that's what a lot of companies do inadvertently. They're not trying to position themselves that way. Just often they're not even, you know, intentionally positioning themselves. And that's the default position, is the smaller, less people to service you and cheaper alternative. So what I'm doing is I'm looking at the competitors, true competitors, and I'm looking for gaps. So is there a certain persona, for example, that my client's product is especially able to serve? Well, let's see if we can maybe focus in on that. Are there certain features or capabilities that their customers really appreciate that stand out and are hard to copy amongst competitors? Let's focus in on that. So I'm looking for gaps. I'm not looking to mimic. I'm looking for, you know, opportunities that I can exploit when I'm comparing to competitors.
Yeah, this is a very common practice that you mentioned. Like, say, for example, a new email marketing service launches, and they will on the day one, they will have pages, you know, compare this service with MailChimp, compare this with ActiveCampaign, compare this with ConvertKit. Like they will have all those pages just to get that Google presence and even people search for it. But when you dig down and see the content of those pages, there's mostly like tables with few lists with tick marks. Yes, we have this feature. No, we don't have this feature. And those features are only written, which obviously benefits that X company and not MailChimp, like just to present a rosy picture of things.
The comparisons are terrible, and you're kidding yourself if you think you're going to come right out of the gate and compete with the incumbent on their playing field. You can certainly compete with the incumbents, but it's got to be because, you know, you're slicing off a little piece of the pie that you're especially able to serve that they just can't go as deep on, or you're coming to the market with some sort of new technology that might make them a little bit obsolete. But you can't just launch a weaker and smaller and feature poor alternative to a product and expect to compete with them directly.
Yep. Okay. Now let's focus on the actual process of writing a copy. Now, for example, you're writing a copy of the about page of the business or improving the copy of the about page. Now, do you write the whole sort of final copy and then start the revision, or there's more to this process?
Yeah. So with me, projects typically always go in two steps. So the first step is a very lengthy research and discovery phase. And I don't want to go off on a tangent too much with this, but if you're a service provider, if you're a consultant or a freelancer, one of the most valuable things you can do is get out of the habit of just taking orders from your customers. So it would be very common, you know, for a client to come to me and say, I need an about page. And when I first started, I would have been like, okay, I will work on your about page. Whereas now the first process is, okay, you might need an about page. But first, I'm going to go through a very extensive research and discovery process where I'm going to learn all about your product, your market, your competitors, your customers. And then I'm going to look for opportunities, things that you're doing poorly, things that you're not doing at all, and prioritize those. And we'll see where the about page is on that list of priorities. And then we'll start knocking off those projects one by one, starting at the top. So, but let's say after I do that, the about page is at the very top. So then what I would be doing is, I would write the copy from scratch, drawing from my research, which would be a lot of voice of customer research. So figuring out what customers are saying about you, what they care about, and reflecting a lot of that language back onto the website. And like I said earlier, in order that makes sense, that takes them through a slippery slope from top to bottom. And then it's putting that into wireframes, which is something that a lot of copywriters don't do, but I think all copywriters should be able to put together a decent wireframe. And then it's delivering it for one short round of revisions.
Okay. Now, writing copy for inner pages like about and other pages is different from, you know, writing the copy for the home page, which gets most attention from business owners. Look, Google may not put that much attention to home page, but still business owners, they want home page to be perfect. Right. Now, do you follow any framework that clearly, you know, tells this is the headline, subheadline, feature, benefits, call to action, etc., like the main components on the home page highlighted in your copy that you deliver to the client?
Yeah, I mean, it would be so much easier if I had a template that I just drew from every single time, but unfortunately I don't have a template, but there are certain elements that I want to, or certain things I want to accomplish on most homepages. So for one, I want to make sure that in the hero section, I am meeting the customer where they are. That's that stage of awareness that we were talking about earlier. Two, I want to make sure that I am positioned properly and clearly, and that as soon as the person comes to the website and they read just a little bit, a couple of headlines, maybe a couple of subheadlines, they know exactly where I stand in this broad spectrum of potential solutions. That's another thing I definitely want to accomplish on a homepage. Another thing is I want them to know the key pain points that we solve for. And I want to talk about those in language they can relate to so that they know that I've done my homework and that I clearly understand their problems, the problems that brought them here. Once I've done that, I want to match my product, at least at a high level, to those pain points so that they know that they might not know all the details just by reading the homepage about how this product is going to solve all their problems, but they know that I understand their pain points and that the product is built in such a way to resolve those pain points. And wherever possible, I want to include social proof. So contextual testimonials, not a carousel where there's like eight testimonials scrolling through because no one's going to watch those. But actually, like if I say that my tool is able to save you time, for example, that's a terrible example. Please don't just say that our tool saves you time. But let's just say in a roundabout way, I'm talking about saving time for my end customer. Then I would want to follow that up with a testimonial that talks about saving time. So that it's like, so they get into the habit of seeing that I say something on the page and I back it up with a customer. I'm not just making things up. I'm not just trying to sound good. I'm reflecting back what customers are saying to the customer or to my prospect. And the other thing is I want to be careful with my calls to action. So if a product is very complex, if there are a lot of logical places to start, then you know your homepage is going to have more call to actions. It's going to act more of like a hub. It's going to be like a choose your own adventure. If it's a more simple product, so something like a Thomas Planner, for example, like I was just talking about, where they sell one thing to one person, then really I'm just using the homepage as a way to show that I understand the problem, that I've got a solution, I can back it up, and I want you to sign up right now. That's all. I don't want to point you to a whole bunch of blog posts. I don't want you to read white papers and reports or anything like that. I just want you to see that this is worth trying and then deliver that call to action.
Okay. Now, do you work with web agencies, like copy of web agencies who offer, you know, services like website design, SEO, and all that stuff?
Very rarely. I did that a little bit more in year one and two. I'll do the odd case now. Like right now, I'm working with a really well-known consultant named Blair Enns. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've heard of him at all. He's from Win Without Pitching. Mm-hmm. So on occasion, I'll take it on when it's really interesting to me. But so I don't often work with web agencies, but we can certainly talk about it. I'm not oblivious to what web agencies can do better. I just choose not to work with a lot of them.
Okay, let's take the example of a website of a SaaS product. Like, what are the, you know, now there's a SaaS product website and it's existing business and they want to hire you for, you know, improving their copy or get better with the copy. What are the mm-hmm. few first red flags that you take note of to indicate that the website copy can be improved further?
So I'll assume that at this point I don't have access to like their analytics. And
exactly. Just the website. You can just see the website like a normal visitor.
Yeah. So some of the things that I'll be looking for is a vague headline or subheadline that, like I said, it looks like they mimicked a competitor that's mm-hmm. much more established than them. If I see that, then I know they've probably made a lot of other mistakes as well in their positioning and in their messaging. The other thing I'll look at is, like we were saying earlier, if the homepage or any other pages aside from a page that's called features is heavily feature focused and not at all talking about pains and matching those pains to the product solutions, I'll look at that as an opportunity. And then I'll look for like a poor call to action strategy. So mm-hmm. if they have call to actions all over the place and it's not clear the journey that they hope their ideal prospect that they hope they would take on the website, and it's just leaving it up to the prospect to click a whole bunch of buttons and hopefully arrive at a pricing page, for example, I'll look at that as an opportunity. And the other thing that I look at more and more these days is their pricing strategy as well. So I'll look at their pricing page because this is another thing that especially in SaaS, but I'm sure it happens in all markets, when pricing their product, they just think, what are my competitors pricing the product as? I'll just copy that or make it a little bit cheaper. And so if I see that happening, that's also an indication, because as we were talking about earlier, a lot of people are not even comparing themselves to the right competitors. And so they're pricing themselves based on competitors that the customer isn't really even thinking about at this time. And there's often opportunities there to play with pricing a little bit.
Okay, so this is your evaluation as a normal visitor without access to the backend. So now you have the access for analytics and all the, you know, data that's there for the website. So in analytics, what all things that you highlight or focus more on, like the bounce rate or pages getting more traffic or people get dropping off? What are the things you focus on there?
Yeah, so some things that I look for that I see a lot on SaaS pages, and I'm sure this relates across the board, is I'll look for certain patterns that suggest that either content is missing on a page mm-hmm. or that it's too far down the page and people aren't actually getting there. So for example, a common pattern that I see is people will land on a homepage, read the hero section, go immediately to the pricing page because they want to know, am I going to waste my time evaluating this product only to find out that I can't afford it? Or that it's too cheap, that it suggests that it's not going to be it's not going to provide enough value for me to actually consider it, which is the case if we're talking about like larger enterprise clients, for example. So I'll look for patterns like that, because that tells me then that pricing page needs to do more than you know, list the prices. It needs to, at least in short, summarize the value that the product delivers and back that up with social proof, because a lot of people are making that assumption of like homepage directly to pricing page. They've got to see value on that page aside from a price, and then they'll go back if you follow them through their journey to learning about your product. And so I'll look for patterns like that. The other things I'll look for, like low hanging fruit, for example, you'll find sometimes that like conversion rates are X on, you know, Chrome, and then when they're on Safari, they're abysmal. Well, there's probably like a rendering issue there. The website is just not rendering properly on a browser. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, mobile is abysmal compared to computer. There might be a problem there in usability. Yeah. When you're actually using the website on your phone. Bounce rate, I actually don't look at too much. And this is just a fresh example because I summed it up, or I finished that project recently, but Tom's Planner, for example, their bounce rate went up despite more people signing up, because, you know, bounce rate, they're not actually going to other pages because the homepage, their positioning was so clear, they were just converting on the first page. So yeah, we could go on and on this for quite a long time, but I'm just looking for little anomalies. I'm usually looking for fairly quick fixes when I'm going into analytics, mm-hmm. either the way they're using the website or the way things are not rendering properly on different devices or different browsers. That's what I'm looking for there. And then I go a lot more deeper into the qualitative side. So actually talking to customers. And
do you also take into account the social media data, sharing data of the website, or that's not relevant for the website copy?
For me, that's not something that I spend time on. No, I don't look at social media outside of seeing what people are actually talking about on social media. So I will look at stuff like that because it's just another form of voice of customer research, kind of like surveying and interviews.
Curious, like you work with mostly, you know, SaaS product owners. So do you take inputs and inspiration for previously done work for similar type of SaaS product when you're doing a fixing copy job, or you take every new job from fresh independent perspective? Like, do you have any temporal structure there?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. So obviously I can't take like research that I've done for another customer and apply it to a new client, just because of like NDAs and things of that nature. I can't leverage proprietary information. But what happens, and what I've been talking about more and more with people, especially as they start getting more experience, is as a freelancer or a consultant, one of the most valuable assets that you have as you get some years behind you is repetitions. And that is when you see the guts of dozens and dozens of companies, and you've seen the same problems over and over again, and you've solved them convincingly, those are repetitions. And when you do that enough times, you have an advantage that, you know, founders and employees just can't replicate, because they've only seen the insides of their company, mm-hmm. and maybe one or two before it, right? So that is a huge, huge advantage that I don't think enough consultants and freelancers are leaning into. And with that experience, it's like pattern recognition. So, you know, if you're like an expert master chess player, for example, you start to recognize patterns on the chessboard. And it's like that with SaaS companies. So I'm not taking, for example, research that I did for HubSpot and applying it to this other CRM, but I am taking all of the patterns and experience that I've gained from seeing the insides of so many different companies. And that definitely speeds up my path to a solution than, for example, someone who's doing this for the first or second time.
Okay, so how much copy is too much or too less? Now, talking from both the perspective of a SaaS owner who's hired you to do the copy work, and also for someone who wants to become a copywriter, or he is a copywriter but wants to improve.
So this is sort of like the long versus short copy debate, in which is better. And the answer is that it really does depend. And so earlier we were talking about stage of awareness. So if a prospect is much earlier in their stage of awareness, in that, for example, they know they have this problem, but they don't know if solutions exist, what types of solutions exist, all the different ways they can solve their problem. They don't know, you know, what the solution should look like, what it should be able to do for them. They are way earlier in their journey. And so you're going to require a lot more copy to take them from that place to the place where they're looking to buy. Now, contrast that with like the exact opposite. If I'm going to the store to buy Kleenex, you do not need to tell me what Kleenex is or what it's for. Mm-hmm. All you need to do is say, here's Kleenex, the dollar off this week, and that's enough. You can literally just do that and I'll buy. And so that's where short copy is required. I don't need a long form sales page in order to sell Kleenex to me. So in between there is where most people are. So if you know you're a new company in an established space, you're going to have to write more copy than the person who, or sorry, if you're solving an established problem and in an established space, you're going to need less copy. If you are solving a new problem or you're solving it in a new way that other people aren't doing, you're going to require more copy. There's a lot more education that has to go there before the customer is actually ready to say, okay, yes, I have this problem. Yes, this person seems to solve it in a new and unique way. Yes, I'm ready to give it a try. And so that's where a lot of people, especially people who don't understand copy, will say, this copy is too long. And the response is always, why? And they'll be like, well, nobody reads. And I'd be like, yes, they do. Your customer will read. Your customer, if we are starting where your customer is and taking them to the finish line, they will read it. On the other side, some copywriters will say long copy always sells better. And that, of course, is not true as well. It's the right amount of copy for the job is what sells.
Yeah, Mike, you know, if you see the landing pages of few, say, courses or lifetime deals of products or specific offers, those landing pages are like mammoth. I won't even call them elephant. They're like mammoth. And Personally, I will just scroll down and see what's the pricing and, you know, the basic features and do it. But I've heard a lot of people say that, you know, these kind of things happen. Like you, instead of saying like, putting two testimonials of people, put 20, give more shows. Mm-hmm. From your experience, does these long, when I'm saying long, it's not long, it's like super long landing pages. I'm sure you've seen those. Does those really work and convert better as compared to if you trim down the copy or trim down the length of that page?
They absolutely do work when, like I said, the journey is a long one in that you're taking someone who doesn't really know or think that they need what you have, mm-hmm. and your ask is quite big. So, you know, if you're, let's step outside of SaaS. Let's say we're selling a supplement, for example. Mm-hmm. And it's a supplement to a problem that's just becoming popular and there isn't a lot of information out there about it. And there aren't a lot of alternatives. This is like a new thing. You're going to require a ton of copy to take them from realizing that, yeah, you know what? I do experience this problem and I would like a solution. I just don't know what a solution does. And you'd have to show what your product is. You'd have to introduce all the research that shows that it's actually valid. You'd want to show tons of people saying that it actually does work for them. And then if the price is high, especially like if it's a super expensive supplement, you need even more because there can't be any objections at the end left open. In order for them to drop, say, you know, like say it's $100 a month subscription, for example, for somebody who's just making average wage for a supplement that they never even thought about before, that person is going to require a lot more copy to take them from the top of the page to the bottom and actually pull out their wallet and buy. Most people are not going to read all the copy, and that's true. And most people aren't going to buy, and that's also true. But the people who show up to your website that are destined to buy are going to need to see a certain amount of information in order to actually make that purchase at the end. So again, it really depends on their stage of awareness, depends on the number of objections that are out there that need to be overcome. And it also depends on the size of the ask at the end. If you don't need a long form sales page to ask someone to sign up for a free newsletter because it's free and it's easy to quit. You do need it if you're trying to sell like $1,000 course, for example. You need a lot of copy because there's just more objections that need to be satisfied in order to actually get them to pull out their wallet and make that purchase.
Now you mentioned wallet. So let's talk about something called pricing. Now, I'm sure now you are at a stage that you can say no to more people than yes. But when you were like starting off, I'm sure you had people who would say, oh, you're going to write copy for me. Man, this is expensive. I cannot afford it. Like, how did you handle pushback? I'm sure a lot of copywriters go through that even while they are at the intermediate phase, not even talking about the beginner phase. How did you handle that pushback?
Yeah, so I would want to take a step back there and just say, like, I talk to a lot of people who are in that situation now. I get emails and whatnot. And my number one piece of advice, and it's not very popular because everybody wants to just quit their job and live this like freelancer dream from the beach. Wow. But my number one piece of advice is that you need to start your business in a position to say no. If you are in a position where you can be pushed around, you're going to toil for years in this really bad space, scraping the bottom of the barrel of clients and doing a ton of work for very demanding clients for very low rates because you need to pay your bills. So the number one thing that I say is, for one, you've got to build up savings and you've got to start your business on the side and actually have some clients and an idea of where future clients and future revenue is going to come from. And this of course assumes that you're not forced into it. Some people are forced into it, whether it's they lose their job, they have a child and they have to work from home, they have a disability. That's one thing and you've got to make it work. But if you have the choice, the number one thing you can do is to get into that place where you're able to say no from the very beginning and be somewhat picky and have some expertise as well, which is another piece of unpopular advice. You actually have to know how to do what you're trying to do and you need to know who you're doing it for as well. The sooner the better that you can like nail that niche, the better. And then that's why I can't speak to that front with too much experience because, like I said, I took those steps. I started my business on the side when we were talking about how I got started. Yeah. I had two clients paying me quite well on the side because I was able to say I need to make this much money in order for this to be worth it to me because I had a job. I didn't need the client, right? And from those clients until now, I've just consistently been charging more and getting more interest. And so I've never gone through this stage that a lot of freelancers and consultants go through where they struggle for years at low rates. And I do think that it's largely available or avoidable if you go about it the right way.
Okay, cool. So let's summarize. Like, if you were to tell it in points, like three major website copy problems that you notice regularly based on your experience of being a copywriter so far, just three.
Okay, yeah. This will probably be a bit of a summary of what we've spoken about so far. But number one, unintentionally positioning yourself. So you're not actually trying to position yourself. You're letting the market position you. And what happens there is the people who are thinking strategically are going to position you as this weak competitor in the corner over here that you don't need to really think about. Mm-hmm. So that would be the number one problem. The other one would be very vague copy. And that can often come from either one, not knowing anything about copywriting and not talking to your customers, or two, looking at companies that are way ahead of you, whether they're in your market or not. So if you're looking at Apple for inspiration on your copy, you're going to fail because they can get away with vague copy. Everybody knows who Apple is. They're just there to see like, what are the new features? What's it cost? Like that's really all you need to know from Apple. That would be another big problem. And I guess the other issue, it's not, I'll do four total. So pricing is the other thing. When it's clear that you're not intentionally pricing your product and seeing what people value and what they're actually willing to pay and what they're willing to pay a little bit extra for, that's a big problem. And when I see a lack of social proof, contextual social proof, and language that suggests that the copy was derived internally. So it's the marketing team talking with the founders, trying to decide how to communicate the product, and the customer isn't in the room, when really good copy is driven by the customer, conversations with the customer, surveying the customer, et cetera.
Awesome. I'm sure that's a lot of knowledge bomb for copywriters wanting to be copywriters, or people who are thinking, oh, my website copy is good now. It's not that good.
Yeah, yeah. Right? And before we finish up, I just want to say that if you're not a copywriter and you're not ready to hire a copywriter, you can do a lot really just by positioning yourself intentionally, understanding what is different and unique about your product in that place that you've positioned yourself, and communicating the value of it in clear, concise language. It's not going to take you all the way there, but that's going to be one heck of a start compared to what a lot of your newer startups are actually doing when they launch their businesses.
Okay, cool. So we are not finishing yet. The best part is still there. So we are going to talk about your toolbox. So what are your five favorite tools that power your online business?
Let's see. I'm not super exciting here, but
you can definitely mention the copywriting tools.
I actually don't have too many. So definitely G Suite. You've got to have that. Mm-hmm. The other one would be Calendly. That's been a huge, it's cut down on so many back and forth emails and missed opportunities simply because scheduling you know, a meeting can be quite annoying. Right now I use Uber Conference for my conference calls, mm-hmm. but I am thinking of switching to Zoom. So I'm probably going to call Zoom a tool, even though it's not what I use right now, but I really enjoy it. So I'm sure I'm going to be using that. I use Balsamiq for my mockups.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty simple tool. It's great for people who like me, who aren't like designers first and foremost. I just need to deliver my copy in such a way that I can communicate like the hierarchy of my messaging and whatnot. So that's four. Let me think of number five. I'm going to give a shout out to Snappa.com. So they are a Canva alternative.
Yep.
And I've done some work for them, and I love their product so much that actually when I worked with them the first time, I worked into the deal lifetime access to their to their paid plan. And actually that's how I created this green screen background right here, is using Snappa. But yeah, you can use them for like social media posts, your website, ads, whatever it is you want to create images for. And they're really affordable too, and run by a great group of guys.
Do you do email marketing?
I do. Yeah. So ActiveCampaign, that's the tool that I use there.
Okay. So the last question, any upcoming tool or service that has caught your eye attention recently?
Yeah. So it's not a tool that I would use so much because I'm a solo business, but I've recently been talking to the founder of a newer tool called Hugo.team.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're a newer startup. They have some really impressive clients, despite being new. And what it is that they do, and I remember this from working my job, is that you'll often have meetings and you'll take notes in those meetings, and there'll be like whiteboard images and recordings, and it goes into a Google Drive and it kind of gets lost and never referred to again, especially like action items. Like someone will be in there writing the meeting notes, like this person's going to do this, this person's going to do that. And then it gets lost and there's no accountability. And what Hugo does is they are able to make it so that your notes basically become live. They integrate with other tools and people. So I could write, something like, all right, this developer needs to do this. That'd be linked to actually GitHub, and they would actually get the notification over there that they need to do XYZ. And so it turns the meeting notes into like a directive for the entire company versus having it get lost in siloed like folders and whatnot. So I really think they've got a bright future.
Interesting. So before we wrap this episode, where can people find you?
So swaycopy.com, I think you can see right there, swaycopy.com. Otherwise, probably social media wise, at swaycopy is where I'm at on Twitter. And that's probably the best place to get me on there. And also, if you are a service provider and positioning your service is something that you are interested in doing a better job of, after listening to this episode and me drilling how important it is to position yourself, I do have something. So if you go to my website, there'll be a little drop down that comes at the top, and it's a free 9,000 word email series on, choosing a niche, the importance of doing it and how to do it. It's completely free. There's no sale pitch at the end of it at all. It's just something that I put together because I got tired of answering the same questions over and over again.
Okay. For geeky people, that is not a drop down. It's a hello bar. So
there you go. Yeah. Hello bar. Yeah.
Yeah. I saw that. Okay, man. Thank you so much for your time. It was amazing talking to you. Have a good day.
Yeah, it was a great time. Flew by so fast.
You can join the free Web Creators community to learn and share with other web creators at webcreatorsgroup.com. And for more goodness, just head over to smartwebcreators.com. And remember, be smart, keep creating. See you next time.